love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
When you're walking down the street and you see a little ghost, what you gonna do about Ghostbusters?
I don't know what that is.
Have you not seen Be Kind Rewind in the last 3 years?
I have not seen Be Kind Rewind ever.
Oh, I love that movie. That's actually like super underrated in my opinion.
Isn't that a movie about people who remake movies?
Yes.
Blockbuster or something? Yeah. That's so interesting. Yes. We should watch it then. But I've never seen it.
It's very much a love letter to movies and stuff. And one of the movies that they do is Ghostbusters, which is, you know, not the first time that somebody has remade Ghostbusters in some capacity. And this is not the first time that we are talking about people who have remade Ghostbusters in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
For the second time this year, we are revisiting a property that we've already covered.
That's right. Chucky not too long ago, like what, 3 weeks ago?
3 weeks ago or something like that. And now we're recovering our third episode ever, which is Ghostbusters.
This is a recovering? It's a third episode?
Our Ghostbusters episode was our third episode we ever
released. Oh, that was our third episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Time flies.
Yeah. 3 years.
Three Crazy. Years.
Yeah.
And here we are.
So let's just get right into it. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality. So 3 years ago, it was us. I think Josh was also there. But it was definitely us three, the three being our producer, Eddie Z.
Actually, I don't think Josh was with us when we did Ghostbusters. I don't remember him
talking.
Was he?
He was.
What did he say? Did he have anything to say?
Well, Josh mainly kept to himself. You know, he was more shy than us.
He's not. Some people don't have the personality of just like spewing nonsense, you know?
Yes.
Luckily, you and I were gifted the gift of gab.
Yes. Yes, I hope it's a gift. Yes. But yeah, so Eddie Z is with us today. Say hi, Eddie. He hasn't been with us for the last couple weeks. So
he was here last week. He just left early.
Yeah, I left early. Yeah, I left early just when I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, seriously.
Just when I wanted to talk about.
He said hi, and then he left, and I'm sure he had plenty to say. So
what? I forgot what we covered last week.
Oh my God, so did I.
Eddie, what are we?
Home Alone.
Oh, Home God, alone. That's yeah, not,
home,
a good,
sweet home.
Not a good sign for that
that's
movie.
Great.
I guess.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
Hilarious.
Us three just went blank on that. What did we cover?
And he's like, I really wanted to talk about it. And now, what did I want to talk about?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But I'm sure we're going to have lots to say today. But in, you know, true fashion of an episode we revisited, we encourage you to go back and listen on our website, remakesrebootsrevivals.com, to our third episode ever, where we went into detail about the 1984 Ghostbusters and the 2016 live-action all-female reboot. Because, you know, we already discussed that, so we're probably not going to get into the hashings of the first film. But lucky for us, lucky for you, if you've seen the new film, you actually don't need to watch the original anyway. So
right.
Okay, the original Ghostbusters was written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. They originally wrote it for John Belushi, but then unfortunately after John Belushi passed, it took them a couple of years and they finally got someone to fit into the role of the main star, Peter Venkman, with Bill Murray. And it stars Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Ernie Hudson, Bill Murray, Sigourney Weaver, Rick Moranis, all-star cast, and it was a smash when it came out in 1984. I think we've talked about many other films actually that year. For some reason, 1984 seems to be like a big year that we keep remaking properties in. But I would say Ghostbusters is probably the most prolific.
Interesting.
And it was definitely one of the most prolific films, I think, of the 80s.
I said interesting, like I haven't heard this before, but we did this
three years ago. So. Like, well, I'm to remind you.
I'm just being polite.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Footloose came out in 1984.
Has that Karate been Kid been remade? I'm surprised it has been remade.
Footloose has been remade.
Wait, it has?
Yes.
Who was in it? Was it Zac Efron? I'm getting visions of Zac Efron.
I don't believe so, but it wasn't very successful. That's why you don't remember it.
Mm.
And I didn't see it, so I can't tell you off the top of my head who was in it. So yeah, Splash came out, Police Academy, The Karate Kid, Gremlins, Beverly Hills Cop, big year.
Gremlins, why hasn't that gotten remade or revived?
Yeah, I wonder how well that would work, actually. I don't know.
Why not? Like, you think Gremlins is a Christmas movie?
Could you qualify that?
The first one takes
that?
Place, yeah. Yeah, in
yeah
Christmas.
It is a Christmas movie.
So then, Christmas. Weren't you saying last week, though, that Die Hard isn't a Christmas movie?
I guess. Oh. It's not a Christmas movie, but it takes place. I meant like it takes place during Christmas.
Okay, well, you did say Christmas movie first, but I'll
did say
that
Christmas
pass.
Movie. But I meant like, you know, that's like one of those ones that the hipsters put on the list. It's just like, oh, this is a Christmas movie.
Yeah. So the original Ghostbusters, we've all seen it. We all enjoy it. Right, guys? We enjoyed this movie.
Hell yeah. No, it's such a good movie.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining. It's pretty, you know, you know what? I'm going to save any thoughts that I have in terms of like my overall quote critiques for when we just talk about this new one. So why don't we just kind of get into the new one? Because like I said, if you've seen the new one, you've seen the original essentially.
Well, all right. So let's just get to what you're saying right now. What you're hinting at is that this movie is just a remix of the original movie.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
I don't disagree with you at all. 100% agree. I actually left the movie theater complaining to Eddie. Just like, ooh, I really wish they hadn't used... Oh, spoiler alert, guys. If you haven't seen the movie and you want to see it, which I do recommend you check it out because I liked it, but we're going to be spoiling the shit out of this movie. So...
Yeah, as we pretty much spoil the shit out of any movie yeah. we cover. So if you've heard... this is the first episode, please know that about this show.
Mm-hmm. So but yeah, I wish they had not used Gozar as the bad guy. That was one of my biggest qualms of this movie because I just felt like, you know, they're ghosts. We could have just stepped it up and just made up another
Samaritan
big bad
god.
And we could have done anything else. Samaritan it didn't have god. To be Gozar. Yeah. And well, like, and credit to now the 2016 movie on this one. At least they had an original premise. It wasn't
very
Gozar,
true. Yeah, very you know? True. It came up with this. It just went into its whole different direction, which I think
it
is
wasn't,
why people
not necessarily a good movie,
like it.
But it still tried to be original, at least.
Yes, it did. It did. So, you know, the thing though is that the original Ghostbusters, right? They're called ghosts, but like, what the hell is that slimy green thing anyway? Is that really a ghost?
Yeah, I think
when I think of ghosts, I don't think that that's what a ghost would be. That's almost like some sort of weird interdimensional creature.
That could be considered.
And Gozar and all of that. Are these ghosts or are these demons? Are these like different forms of spirits and stuff? Well, like, so to me, they take the term ghost and they use it very loosely. And, you know, scientifically, none of this makes, I mean, it's fine because it's all pure fantasy. It doesn't really make any sense in terms of like the actual definition of the words, right?
Well, I think Gozar, they said that Gozar, they... Right, because it's neither male nor female, and we must respect gender nonconformity.
Yeah.
They are a god of the underworld, so ghosts go to Gozar, and Gozar, you know, rules over ghosts.
Yeah,
so I guess
so,
that's where Gozar's connection to ghosts busting comes into play.
I suppose so. Well, then What is the gatekeeper and the keymaster? Are those ghosts?
I'm assuming
I
guess they're technically demons and stuff. I think.
Yeah, that's the thing. This all feels very demonic in my opinion.
I mean, wow, we're getting into... All right, I didn't know that this was going to be a conversation about whether or not Ghostbusters are actually busting ghosts or actually taking down...
Because that was the one thing entities. That was in my head the entire time I was watching Afterlife. I'm like, wait a minute, these aren't really like ghosts.
How is this now something that runs through your mind when you're watching the original one, though?
Well, I haven't watched the original in a long time, so...
But
being that
I guess
just watched it.
I mean, yeah, in your defense here, yeah, they're not busting ghosts, but I am assuming that the characters Egon and Peter, they're really just paranormal scientists, right? They're just exploring the supernatural, the unexplained, and they're just using the ghosts. I think they're using Ghostbusters as just branding. But, you know, like you know, when you go to Cooper Pest Control, like, pests encompasses a lot of vermin.
This is true. Okay, that's, you know what? I absolutely accept that. And I'm willing to let this go. And it, like I said, it's not a deal breaker, but it's just like, are they ghosts? Well, yeah. What the hell?
I didn't even reference that a little, right? Like, Peter Venkman ends up going into, what's it called, teaching marketing, right? So, like, Ghostbusters, I think he came up with the term Ghostbusters, and he's the one who decided to make the company, like, around this idea of ghostbusting. Mm. Right? Does that sound familiar? Yes, that's familiar. Yeah, and I think that's why he ends up teaching marketing instead of, like, paranormal shit.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the premise, then, of Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Actually, do we want to go over a little bit of the history of Ghostbusters Afterlife?
We can.
Yeah, I mean, we are a film history podcast. But this film has been in development hell for decades almost, right? Because Harold Ramis himself wanted to revisit. He wanted to do a third movie before he passed away at the age of 69.
They've been talking about a third Ghostbusters movie for a very long time.
And I just found this out, but apparently him and Bill Murray had a falling out because of Groundhog Day, during Groundhog Day.
Why? What happened during Groundhog Day?
Apparently they just did not get so was Harold Ramis the director?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. See, okay. Well, apparently Harold Ramis and just Bill Murray just did not get along during the filming of that. Harold Ramis has gone on record as saying that he just thinks that Bill Murray was going through some personal shit at the time. But, like, they did not speak until he was on his deathbed.
Aw, that's kind of sad.
How tragic is that, right? Yeah, which that is think sad. Knowing that, and I found this out after the movie, but that does make this movie a little bit more poignant at the end. But I'll talk about that a little later because I think that's this movie has been so Harold Ramis, he wanted to revisit this franchise a while ago. I think he was actually tapped to direct the 2016 movie, but he passed away, and then it went to Paul Feige, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we never mentioned this when we covered Sabrina, but you know he was a Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Was he? Director. He was
the teacher in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. He was.
I think we did cover that. I do remember that.
Did we? Okay.
I didn't remember
if we talked about it, but fun fact, guys. There you go. Yeah. We didn't. Anyway.
Super fun.
Now, Ivan Reitman, he's the current director, right?
Yes.
He is the son.
No. Jason is the son of Ivan Reitman.
Okay. Ivan Reitman is the one who directed Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Jason is his son.
Yes.
And there had been so many rumors for so many years that he was going to direct this. And then finally, I think the trailer dropped in, like, what, late 2019?
Yeah, I think so.
And it was supposed to come out last year, but because of the pandemic.
It was supposed to come out in March, I think, of 2020.
There you go. And because, oh, God. That's...
Seriously.
And so the movie got pushed back all the way to November 2021.
Yeah, well, so after Harold Ramis died in 2014, you know, they were really close to actually bringing the third Ghostbusters film to light. After he died, they moved forward instead with the all-female one.
Right.
And after it was a big bust, they actually, I'm pretty sure they had to move studios and stuff. And it took them a while to be like, you know what, we need to let us redeem to some people. Again, I didn't think that the Ghostbusters reboot was as terrible as other people did.
It wasn't good either, though.
Well, it wasn't necessary.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't like anybody watched that and was like, oh, wow, how refreshing was that? But, yeah. So I just wanted to mention that actually it was because of his death that they made that one. Because they're like, well, we wanted to make a Ghostbusters movie, so we're going to make one. How are we going to do it?
Right. Kevin, Melissa McCartney, I keep wanting to say Sarah Paulson, but I know that's wrong.
Kristen Wiig?
Thank you, Kristen Wiig.
They do look kind of alike.
They do. Thank you for at least agreeing with me on that one. But yeah, so interesting history of this movie, Afterlife came. I actually feel like when the trailer dropped, I was kind of just like, my initial reaction was, what is this? It seems like a fan film. Does it even seem like the Ghostbusters? And here we are, November 2021. A year and a half later.
A year and a half friggin' later.
Crazy. Interestingly enough, so you could tell they CGI'd a portion when they referenced the year the movie is taking place in, because they had to, it's taking place in the present, so they referenced 2020, but they took out the dialogue that makes reference to the year. I'm assuming they didn't get the cast to re-roar the line, and they CGI'd the 2021 in like the apocalypse countdown.
Yeah,
but I just found it interesting. They should have kept it 2020, because I feel like a lot more people would have been, yeah, no, that was the year of the apocalypse.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
like 2020 did feel pretty dismal.
That would have been cute. I did realize, like, when they were going through all the years, when they went to 2021, everybody just said nothing.
I guess you couldn't, like, because they were summer and no one was masked up, so that makes sense, I guess.
There you go.
I'm just saying.
But yeah,
they were on to something here.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting because Ghostbusters, it almost, there's like the very like personal quality about it. Like, okay, this new, there's something very personal, at least about this one, right? It's called Afterlife. It's almost like as if it was the reversal of Rebirth, right? Instead of Rebirth, it's now Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
You have Jason Reitman, the son of Ivan Reitman, the original director, doing it. And it's pretty much all these people uncovering this, like, the Ghostbusters past and their ties to it. That's pretty much the plot, right? This family, a father and a grandfather that they didn't have an emotional relationship or any sort of relationship with dies and leaves his farmhouse to them. So they go to the farmhouse. And they slowly start uncovering all of this information about who he was and their connections to the Ghostbusters and what's going to happen. You know, the whole central plot of the film.
Right.
Which,
as I spoiled, Gozar is coming back, and Gozar, for some reason,
has pretty much the same exact villains.
What is it? A Sumerian? A Sumatran?
Yeah, I would say Sumerian. I think it
Sumerian. I think it was Sumerian. There's a Sumerian temple in the middle of the U.S. for some reason.
Right? Yeah. And who was that J.K. Simmons guy?
Oh, he is. Oh, they reference him in the original one, though, that character.
Yeah, but like in passing or something? Like, what's
kind of like he's an architect of the building that Gozar comes out of in the original. And if you played the Ghostbusters game, he is the main antagonist in the Ghostbusters game, which I believe is canon to the series.
Huh, interesting. Yeah. The game.
The video game, yeah, it's a video game.
Oh, wow. Wow, a game canon to the series. That's pretty interesting. But yeah, so everything about it just felt really personal, you know? Finding your emotional connection to the story, right, through these characters. And the characters are two children, which are played by...
Finn Wolfhard.
Oh, yeah, played by Finn Wolfhard.
And McKenna... Grace.
Hard. I said Wolfhard.
Is it hard or hard?
It's hard. Hard. It's hard.
Oh, Wolfhard. That's creepy. A Wolfhard.
McKenna Grace.
And McKenna Grace. Who, yes. I think, let me tell you, star quality.
Yeah, she's very good. Where do we know her from? Do we know her from anything?
I don't know her from anything. I know her from this. Oh, her. And then I think her opposite, who I guess it's Haley Finn, but like I think her real opposite was the little kid who played podcast, who I think him and her talk about. I would watch a movie of just those two.
Oh, really?
You enjoyed, I think they were podcast? So adorable together. I think he was so cute. I wanted to adopt him. And
this feels like at least the eighth kid that has its own podcast in one of these remakes that we're
I feel like it's a podcast have become so trendy that they're so, I mean, you know, the plot of like the new Sex and the City is like, she's no longer a columnist. Now she has a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if they're making fun of us or they're just recognizing that we have a lot of power. I wish I had that power. I don't know. But
it's like the kid in the Mighty Ducks and Chucky.
Yeah. Chucky, yeah.
And now this. It's like they're just always popping up. And now I feel kind of, I feel mocked personally by these properties. So.
Zoomers have millennia. Zoomers have podcasts.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just a very interesting, so much so that this kid doesn't have a name other than podcast.
Yeah.
So.
Oh,
true. That's why I remember her. She appeared as the younger version of Sabrina Spellman in the Netflix Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's done a lot, actually.
Has she? Wow. Was she in Babysitter's Club at all?
No.
No, she was not.
but she was in I, Tanya. She played the younger version of Tanya Harding.
Oh, that's a good role. So, yeah.
So Trevor and Phoebe, their mother is Callie. And yeah, they're just trying to like figure out, you know, who their grandfather was and all this stuff. And it turns out that they are actually all Spanglers and that they are the spawns of Dr. Egon Spengler, who at the beginning of the film dies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, they meet podcast. The story belongs to Phoebe. Let's be honest, right?
This is most definitely Phoebe's both coming of age, coming to herself story.
Yeah.
And hero's origin, really.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And I think, honestly, kind of a smart choice on the creative part. Like, I think with Phoebe, they created such a fully realized character. And I think her performance was just so genuine that, like, honestly, this movie, while it has flaws, I think because of her performance and, like, I think because of the characterization of her, I think they just, like, I think they had a winning formula here with her particularly. Like, focusing a lot of the movie on her kind of became, in a very nice way, like a very sentimental goodbye to Harold Ramis, the actor, as well as the character, Egon.
Yeah. Yeah, she becomes kind of like a symbol for not only for his character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's an outsider. She's misunderstood. She doesn't have a lot of friends. She's really scientific. And she bonds to her grandfather in a way where it's so much so like she feels the way that people looked at him. People look at her, right? Like he's not nuts. It's something like, I'm not nuts. I'm actually a human being. You know, don't write me off and all this stuff. So she's got her own little internal thing that she has to figure out. And she comes out of her shell. Mm-hmm. In the film, and it tells that story. And like you said too, I mean, I feel like we're rushing to the ending and wanting to talk about the ending because we keep bringing it up, but that's like the big thing at the end.
It is a big thing at the end, but no, I think, well, I don't mean just about the ending in general though, because I think parts of the movie, just like how we're trying to get to that ending, a lot of this movie did feel a little bit that way too, where like there were a lot of contrivances.
Yeah, no, yeah, a lot of it was contrived.
I think even Eddie pointed it out when we were in the movies, like when Paul Rudd's character, Groberson. But
yeah, Gary Groberson.
Yes, that's it. Thank you. Like he was like the only person at Walmart at this hour, because when has that ever happened? Like, no, there's never just one person at a Walmart any given time of day.
Yeah, well, also, there was so much fan service happening that sometimes it was like, was that really needed? Like the Stay Puffed marshmallows bit. What the hell was that about, and what purpose did that serve?
Selling toys, because whatever toy I can find with that, I want to buy. I just like, if there's an ornament, I'm going to have it.
Ooh, that's a good ornament.
It's so cute.
It was cute. I do agree with you, Nicole. I think the sequence was just way too extended.
Yeah, it was way too long, and it made no fucking sense, and it proved unessential to any sort of plot device.
Yeah, because
so what the hell was it there for?
Why? I mean, it only sets up for him to be the keymaster.
The scene sets up for him to be the keymaster, but why were the little State Puff marshmallow men there? That's the main question. Yeah. Because like, why is Gozar bringing the Stay Puffed marshmallow? Like, you mean like, what is it?
And why are they multiplying? Why? Like, it just didn't
we know the connection
sense
from the original, but like, why would Gozar waste her energy doing this? I feel
And you know but I mean? That's the thing, like they know, you know, the fans want to see certain aspects, right? So they're like, oh, they want to see the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and it's not enough just to see a billboard on the side of a building. We have to actually bring him back, and we're going to multiply him and have him be in this, you know, little slapstick comedy bit. Mm-hmm. And I just, there was so much to your point before I said that, you brought up like, you know, there were just kind of like things that felt really contrived. And I thought a lot of that was the fan service parts that weren't actually relevant to the plot.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt like, you know, like, really, you're going to do that? Like, and I don't know, do you guys love those moments, or do you roll your eyes at moments like when they're in the jail and they're like, don't I get one phone call? And the cop goes, who are you going to call?
Oh, I rolled my eyes.
He rolled his eyes.
I did. I did. And I think I even made a comment that he's like, oh, come on. Like they didn't need to do this.
And then, and the funny thing too, I think with that, because I'm at the end of the day, all those shit, that shit is for me, really.
Cause yeah,
I love that I eat those things up. You know, I know who I am, but it is that it to this day, you can never, even in reality, you can never say like who you're going to call. It's never the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that is true.
Moving forward, we always would think Ghostbusters.
It's true. Yeah, even of now course. To this day. Yeah. I will say though, Eddie, I just want to defend you here real quick. Like, yeah, you eat it up, but like I feel like the reason a lot of the audience connects with you is because like Nicole is, sorry, a film snob. I fall in the middle where, right?
First of all, when you invited me to your film club, I showed Switchblade Sisters, okay?
My
oeuvre is large. I have to defend myself here, so.
But no, I'm just saying, it's just like where Nicole, I think you tend to think more high-mindedly of film. Eddie definitely falls into more of a fanboy category, right? Where like almost like the every person, like the typical audience. I fall somewhere in the middle, right? Where I subscribe to both, right? I have, you know, I'm a cheap slut that way, I guess. But yeah, you ate that up. And I don't think that's anything wrong with that, right? Because I think from my point of view as like a producer, I would say it's like it did what it was supposed to then with some of those scenes, right?
When yeah. Like, so well, that's why I asked the question, yeah.
What I was thinking when I saw that scene, I was like, oh, yeah, it's cute and stuff like that. And I could think, oh, my God, I hope they make little toys about this because this will be really cute for the kids. And then I'm thinking, well, this scene is for the kids because your main characters are these two adorable kids, right? You're going to bring your kids to see this, right? And there's going to be that frightening scene where the demon is going to take over the teacher's body and make him the keymaster. So you have this marshmallow moment to fluff that scene up, mm-hmm. you know, to keep that scene nice and sweet. And then bang, you have the horror. That's what I was saying too. When I said it, this almost reminds me of the Stranger Things formula.
Right.
Where you have three different parties. You have the kids, adorable kids and their grand adventure and how they see this as big Dungeons and Dragons adventure. You have the teenagers, right, who are experiencing this horror, kind of like Elm Street. And then you have the adults, the parents, who are feeling very, very hopeless, but are trying to figure it out and trying to defend their children, you know. So this movie had those three elements there.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean... Without a doubt, a lot of times when I was watching this movie, it felt very nostalgic. It felt very much like I was watching one of those like 80s almost Spielberg movies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not a bad quality, I think, for a movie like this to have, to be totally honest.
Yeah, so so when I asked, you know, like, did you roll your eyes or were you there for it? You know, it's interesting because, of course, my immediate reaction was that I rolled my eyes. But then I was like, well, what else am I expecting from like a Ghostbusters movie? Mm-hmm. You know, that's also, you know, you said that you were upset that they brought Gozer, but who else would they have brought back or what other story would they have told? Isn't that as much of what we want to see as we want to see, you know, the actual Ghostbusting and like everything? Like we just want to see the original film.
No, I didn't want to see the original. I didn't want to. I actually was so, more.
Did you not want them to come back at the end? Were you not waiting that's for not what Peter Venkman and
I
all
think
of them?
It would have been okay if they had come back. I just think the villain could have been original. It didn't have to be Gozer.
I don't know. I agree in theory with you, but I'm also like, but one, why am I surprised? But two, like, why not just bring back the same villain and have it be like every 32 years this threat is
there? Because that feels like very
home.
Contrived. Because that feels like a very, very big contrivance. It just feels like it doesn't make any sense for the world. And it's just like, why? It just, like, we defeated Gozer. That's
well,
it.
Well, we talked about how much the science of this film doesn't make any sense. So I don't think it has to make that much sense. But it's also like instead of coming up with something that some different story that, you know, might have actually disappointed people, let's give the people what they want.
Yeah,
which is more
know.
Of the same.
I just feel like that's the biggest sticking point where I just feel like they could have just done a brand new story. I'm not even saying change any of the beats around this story, which is, you know, the story of like a daughter forgiving her father, you know, and her abandonment issues. Nothing has to change. All you have to do is just change the big bad at the end. That's all you have to do. Just come up with something original. It didn't have to be Gozer. I think Gozer is great. I think Gozer is representative of gender nonconformity and way ahead of it, their time. I think I actually, you know, the character design of the original one was cool. I think it doesn't sell as well in 2021 until we finally got.
It feels very 80s, yeah.
It felt very 80s until finally when, like, there's a scene when, like, they get rid of, like, one of the keepers. So now they had to do a little bit of a new character design, and that looked cool, where she was, like, kind of, like, half, like kind of, like, a, like, I don't know, you know, like,
distorted,
it was a cool look. I thought that was, like, that was effective. That could have been, they could have just made Gozer that, like, for the whole movie. It didn't have to be, I don't know. I just feel like, I'm really harping on this, but, like, it just, I didn't need Gozer.
I mean, so that's the thing, like, maybe in a way I'm playing devil's advocate, but I also, like, you know, I'm trying to be realistic about why this movie was made and what, you know, they're trying to give people here. Like, I'm not the biggest Ghostbusters fan, so I'm not saying that's necessarily what I want. But, like, you know, I'm putting my head in the mind of the filmmakers, and let's just give them more of the same, right? Let's just put the Marshmallow Man, put the Gatekeeper, you know, the Keymaster, all that in there. Like, that's what people want to see.
Give us
my
a
question
line. Are you the
is,
Gatekeeper?
Yeah, like same dialogue and everything. How much do you think of them putting the same exact villains in this movie had to do with the failure of the 2016 original story?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because I would, again, it's just like where Hollywood isn't, they're not, I don't know. Well, I don't know what like the fans were saying, because like a lot of the vitriol that was coming from that movie was sexist and racist, right?
Yes.
I think if you listen to the people who were a little more critical of the film for like actual objective reasons, not to do with like the superficiality of like, you know, having women in the front. For example, the main flaw with this movie was that everything was a joke. All the characters were trying to be funny. Yeah. And when every character is trying to be funny and they're just not, it just feels like kind of forced.
I get that. Yeah.
They didn't have their straight man. But then on top of that, I can't say that I remember the plot that well, except that Chris Hemsworth, I think, was a god who was trying to release all, what's it called? Similar, I mean, more or less similar to the Gozer story, but it was just a different iteration of that story.
Yeah. So right? It's interesting, yeah. Because, well, here's an instance where we got the Ghostbusters, but that was all pretty much original, and people rejected it. This film is getting really positive reviews, and people really, really love it. And the truth is, like Rolando said, what I said, which is that this is a remix of the first film. It's the exact same film. We're just like kind of changing up just a little couple of things about it. So it begs the question too, like, well, one, yeah, we're not being fed anything original, but do people actually, that's the thing, like Rolando's saying he does want some, at least some form of originality in there, but is that what people really want? Because it kind of feels like everyone's perfectly satisfied with it.
Eddie, what did you want?
I did want a Next Generation feel to this, which I got. Like a take,
like Star Trek.
passing on the torch, picking up them,
passing the baton. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And that was definitely this.
So it was that, and like I said, I wanted the what I didn't care for about the reboot was. The remake was that it had this heavy comedy to it, and it took away the feel of the excitement or the seriousness of this being kind of a supernatural film too. And this film, The Afterlife, gives that. It gives that, you know, that begin of like this, there's a mystery going on. There's something horrific that's about to take place, and it's this generation that now has like have to deal with the problem. Mm-hmm. They have to finish what the previous two generations couldn't complete. Yeah.
So
just to get rid of this god.
So yeah, so you actually thought that then bringing back that story worked in that way?
Well, it comes full circle. It comes full circle, and it completes. No one can see you with your.
I know.
No one can see your that expression. But it completes the story about this Gozer and.
Yeah, until the next film in 32 years.
Well, that's I think for the problem with that idea that it comes full circle is just like the circle was closed. We're getting is
they didn't destroy her or them.
We got rid of it.
They didn't. They closed the dimension. They closed the portal. They got rid of the keys, but they didn't get rid of the god.
Yeah.
And the thing is that he knew that it was going to return again. I mean, you have. Mm-hmm. Spengler knew, Egon knew that it was going to come again. And he was trying to set up. And once again, they didn't kill it.
Right.
They contained it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that. So, yeah, I'm really harping on this point because I think. No, because here's the thing. Ultimately, at the end of the day, what we were given was it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because what. This movie gave people ultimately what they really wanted. What they ultimately really wanted to do was to see Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson in their getup one more time. And then to see a CGI rendering of Harold Ramis as Egon and stuff and like kind of see the Ghostbusters back together again one more time. Because the real story here... That was the plot of Gozar. That's just the plot. The real story here is a child and her mother making peace with the abandonment that they feel from their grandfather. Yeah. You know, that is the ultimate story that's going on here, right? Like making peace with that. Interesting that this is the story they go with, especially considering like the falling out that Harold Ramis had with Bill Murray. To kind of make to make Egon a little bit of a martyr, a dickhead martyr in this a little bit, but you know,
why does it have to be that way? Can't it just be misunderstood?
Misunderstood. But he still hurt all dickhead. His friends. He still hurt all his friends, and he hurt his family though with his decision.
Yeah, right? To save the world.
Well, but it doesn't matter.
But they also
it's still.
But nobody was listening to him. Ray said that he went crazy. You know, people were dismissing him.
That's true, yeah.
So he almost felt like he had no choice but to sacrifice his life to take care of this problem.
Right. And that's what you have the Phoebe character, you know, like you have that moment where her mother's saying, like, he just left us, he abandoned us. And she was saying, you're wrong. You know, there's so much more here. There's so much more.
Yeah,
and it's her taking back the legacy of what it really meant. So she's just not like, she's like choosing, like, you know, she's choosing at that moment the legacy that her grandfather has left behind, the legacy of being a Ghostbuster, being responsible, knowing that whatever the gifts, technology that you haven't utilized to protect and save others.
Yeah, and she's asking her to look a little deeper. You know, don't just look at how it looks on the outside. Mm-hmm. You know, open the book, turn the pages, read it, and you'll see that there's actually something kind of, there's more than what meets the eye. Which I think it was well hit, but it would have been better hit, perhaps maybe if Trevor wasn't a character. Because it's interesting that you said this is a story about, you know, a woman and her daughter, and you didn't even mention that there's a son there.
Oh my God. Well,
because Trevor's part in this story is just kind of there. I think they just needed Finn Wolfhard as a name and for, I guess, maybe some comedic relief, even though Phoebe has more of the comedic things that whether or not it was funny was dad there. Jokes. Yeah.
Oh my God. Her dad jokes. There we go. So I agree with you 100%. You didn't need him. I think I said that leaving the movie. It's just like, wow, I really didn't need this character at all. And
not at all.
You know, the other character who they dropped the ball on, once again, the black character in a Ghostbusters movie. Because this girl, Lucky.
It's just a remix of the first. So what do you
expect? Just like she was just thrown in. And I was just like, God, like, Like, at this point, don't even bother. Like, we have podcasts. We already have, like, a I don't want to say token minority because belittling them. But you have a character who is a minority who just feels so ingrained in the story that it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't need Lucky at that point because the love interest between her and Trevor, it doesn't even have a resolution because, like, I don't think they even end up together, right?
Yeah, it's not, like, the beats aren't all there. You don't even really care. Like, I don't really get a sense of who Lucky is. Like, when did they even become friends? You know, I thought he was, like, embarrassing himself at Spinners. When did they invite him to go to the mountain? That was really uneven. but it was also, like, why are they doing it?
Yeah, well, I guess it was a little uneven. Hard worker. No, yeah.
Is that why?
But that's one of the contrivances. Yeah, this was a,
yeah,
this
that was one of the contrivances for sure.
This was easily so to Eddie's point where he said that they were trying to do the Stranger Things. I think if I remember correctly, the idea was the teenage story was supposed to be like a John Carpenter film. Does that sound right?
Are you talking about Stranger Things or this film?
Yeah, I'm talking about Stranger Things, right? Like the teenage storylines were supposed to be like a John Carpenter film. I think they were trying to go for that, but they kind of dropped the ball. So they could have, their best decision should have been to just omit it because
I've never seen Stranger Things.
Okay. There's like three, like Eddie said, like the kids have like kind of their own like little Spielberg-esque adventure. The teenagers, I think, are like a John Carpenter movie. And I forget the adults are like more like
Jim Jarmusch.
Huh?
I was making a joke. I said Jim Jarmusch.
No. I don't think so. But anyway, you're right. Because even at the end, so in the end, when the mom hugs Harold, I keep saying Harold, Miss Egon, right? We finally get closure.
I guess. Let's not go there just yet because closing.
It's just like Trevor had nothing to do at that point.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't like... Did he even touch? He just said, hey, or something.
I think so. It was like, I fixed your car.
Yeah. It was like, sorry, I've been too busy, you know, getting a hard on.
Trying to get laid, you know.
And there was this like, and that's the thing. Like, we had a pretty interesting story that for the most part worked. It was just these little things that kept throwing it off. You know, like Trevor wasn't necessarily needed. You know, one of the big things too, which kind of bothered me was when they brought back Janine in the very beginning. And she's like, oh, hello? Oh, yeah, you need something? I'm the one who called you, you know, to get to Spengler's place. And we never see her again. It's never really explained why she was there in the first place.
I guess we didn't stay for the after credits.
I did not stay for the after credits. Is that like a thing for every fucking movie?
There are two of them.
Basically.
Yes.
There were two after credit scenes.
Two after credit scenes.
So you didn't see Sigourney Weaver.
I did not see Sigourney Weaver. What? I was waiting for Sigourney Weaver this whole fucking movie.
You know how they did it? So, and they got me. They got me because I'm like watching the credits roll. And I had looked it up. I was like, is there an after credit scene? Yes, there's two. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll stay. And then like her name shows up in like the cast. And I was just like, Sigourney Weaver, where was she? And then the next, immediately after, they play her scene with her and Bill Murray. It's a very cute little scene. They're doing like that that science experiment that he was doing where he was shocking people.
Okay.
Right. That had nothing to do with the plot. That was another one of those fan services.
I think that's more. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That they ended up together.
The implication there is that they are still together. And finally, the very, very last scene, which I think is important, is Winston, Zeddemore, and Janine are having a meeting. He's apparently a billionaire now, right? I guess that's reparations because, you know, his was a character often neglected by the writers, right? So this is how they fix, I guess, those flaws. Anyway, he is a billionaire now. And we see that he has brought back the Ecto-1 to the original Ghostbusters house. And he's been talking with Janine. And it seems like they're implying that he is trying to build that next generation now that he has, like, you know, now seeing everything that's happened again, he feels inspired to figure out, all right, we're needed. The Ghostbusters are needed again. And Janine and him are kind of like conspiring together.
But why was she there in the first scene?
Apparently, according to what I've been seeing from fan theories, is that she actually might be the mom. She might be this lady's mother.
Okay, that's fine. That's fun. But that's not from the film. That's a fan theory. So it's just in terms of the script.
But that's the thing. The hint actually comes from the movie because of... So what we end up at the beginning of the first... Of the second after credit scene, it starts off with one of the deleted scenes from the movie where Egon and Janine are like hugging, and she's
wishing him good luck.
She's wishing good luck. He gives her a coin, a special coin that she still has and stuff. It's a very sentimental scene. The implication is that they are very much a couple at the point in time.
Yeah, it's interesting because that's what I thought when I saw her. And I was like, oh, you know, look at her. Look at her like she's your daughter, right? Look at her in some way. Didn't happen.
No.
So it was just like, so then why are you passing off this house to her? What is your involvement here?
Because I think Janine, she still cared for Egon all these years. So she even though he went... what they feel like he went crazy with this obsession or being obsessed with this theory that he had, she still, like she said, I took care of his finances. Mm. I made sure the bills were paid. So you only do that for a person like you really care about them. Mm-hmm. You know,
she ended up being his primary
caregiver, you know, through all this. She's the one that she, like when, the, you know, how the whole town just referred to him as the dirt farmer. And then you asked, did you know him? And like, no one knew him. But Janine was the only one that really, from the original crew, she was the only one that made sure that he was okay.
I wish she had a little bit more, but
yeah, she did. It's a wasted character.
It is,
yeah. And that actress, which is amazing.
Yeah, she is. Oh, I love her designing women.
I really wanted more. I wanted more of her.
She's aged so fabulously.
And I was one of those people. I was actually surprised that they brought everybody back, just because I would have just been happy with Dan Aykroyd, which was the one that was hinted that he was going to be in a scene when we first were doing research on this. But to see that that they all came back, it was kind of nice to have that kind of closure.
No, absolutely.
With them, the four, and then seeing just like. I get like it was a little teary eye just to see, you know, the ghost of Egon holding his hand, steadying her hand.
So when I was watching the film, I was like, this is kind of right. And then the ending happens and I was like, OK, this is awesome. So when they get to the house, when they realize it's a trap and they trap and then, you know, you're like, oh, my God, they're never going to kill this woman. You know, like this being, this guy Gozer or whatever. And then you hear the voices. Right. Everything after that was just like. The reason that they made the movie, really, you know, it was like Rolando said, to bring these guys back to see them again. And it had this, like I said earlier, too, it all felt really personal. You know, it was like seeing them in their costumes again, getting them together after 32 years and then giving like that closure to the Harold Ramis character. And first of all, that was so well. How did they get him to look that fucking good? I could not believe when I saw his face, how well that CGI worked.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it also helps that
kind of floored.
It helps that he's a ghost, right?
It helps that he's a ghost, but still, it's recognizably Harold Ramis, mm-hmm. a younger whatever Harold Ramis. Because when he died, he was definitely much fatter and all that stuff. So they must have gotten some like. That's why he died. So
what do you mean?
Well, he had a heart condition from obesity. Now, of course, he wasn't morbidly obese.
Wait, Harold Ramis had a, what's it called? He had like a neurological disease.
Is that why he died?
Uh-huh.
Am I thinking of...
I think you're thinking of Marlon Brando.
He had an autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis. Mm-hmm. And lost the ability to walk.
He couldn't even speak at the end. That's why when him and Bill Murray made up.
Maybe I think I might be thinking about somebody else. Regardless, he did not look like that. So it's like, when did...
Of course, yeah.
How were they able to, you know, get this... It's pretty crazy. This is like the positives that computer-generated imagery can do.
Tupac is giving like hologram concerts, you know?
Oh my God, shut the fuck up and listen to what I'm saying. This is like the good stuff that comes out of this. And it was actually really poignant because, like, yeah, like what you're saying, you know, the kind of like closure to real life stuff, Bill Murray and Harold Ramis's falling out and that they never got to have. And then story wise, them seeing each other again, him actually being there for his family and stuff. I'm really sentimental person. You know, I love me some good, wholesome content. And obviously, you know, people that you lose and that you try to reconnect with in life are always things that work for me. Yeah. And so this definitely just like tugged at my heartstrings and stuff. And I thought it was actually like the ending kind of made up for the whole fucking movie.
Oh,
for me. Because I was like, I was ready to kind of not enjoy it. And then the ending happened. I was like, I enjoyed this movie.
Huh. That's so interesting.
And then when it goes up to the stars and it says for Harold and all this stuff, like, yeah. And then just the whole story of how they handled his character, you know, how he was misunderstood, but he ended up, like we said, you know, being a martyr. Mm-hmm. And he was just misunderstood and all this stuff and like the messaging there. And then him having, you know, the things that you can have in movies, which is goodbyes and seeing mm-hmm. each other again and closure and all that stuff. Because none of that exists in real life. It was just really nice seeing that. So,
yeah. I felt the ending was a little bit of a nostalgic exploitation, to be totally honest.
Oh, my God.
Now, I'm not saying, again, I'm just calling it what it is. However, it's very exploitative. It was. Honestly, like, giving me that shot of seeing the three surviving Ghostbusters and a CGI Harold Ramis is manufactured to make you feel something.
All things it's, are manufactured to course. Make you feel something.
And I'm not necessarily saying I'm calling it out, but I still ate it up a little bit. I disagree with you, Nicole. For me, I actually was enjoying the movie up until Gozar. And then that ending came up and I was just like, okay, I could see behind the curtain. I saw the wizard for what he was.
And so yet, it's interesting. Yeah.
I'm just choosing to say, it's just like, I see you. I respect it. And I'm going to let myself be carrying the movie because I think it's still, at the end of the day, story-wise, because of this character Phoebe and her mother, I think because I was handled so spectacularly well, I was able to just let myself go in this moment.
I don't disagree with you that it was a little exploitative, but I guess because it was so personal to, you know, everyone involved in the film, you know, the fact that this is the son of the original director making it and that, you know, Harold Ramis was the writer, not even he acted in Ghostbusters. He was the writer.
Right.
You know, that with the original actors and co-writer of the film there present and them almost getting to say goodbye to him. I guess that personal quality made me feel like, OK, this isn't just straight up exploitation. This is actually cathartic. And it was just interesting to see that and to experience that with them. But I don't disagree with you, but I also am not 100% bothered by that. I'm a big fan of exploitation when done correctly or when done intriguingly.
Right.
So
interesting. Yeah. I think it was just, I was more enamored by like ultimately this girl's Phoebe's journey. And like this just because like, the original cast just coming in felt like a nice icing to the cake here. Yeah. But it was overall, because her story, I think overall her story, and thank God she was the main character really, was so well done that it's just like, by the end, I was just like, this was nice. It was a very, very nice journey I went on. I was kind of shocked at how much I enjoyed this movie coming out of it. I thought it was a sweet movie. And, you know, credit here. It's just like, I know it was just a remixed movie of the original, but like you could tell, I hate to say it, but like there's a lot more respect here to the original source material than there was in the 2016 one, you know?
Yeah, it's got nothing but respect. It's almost like the original Ghostbusters is like the Holy Grail or something. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a reverence.
Yeah. I will say though, on top of the other complaints that I had, the one complaint that I did want to mention is that I did feel that in tone, the 2016 one was what I would anticipate more from a Ghostbusters remake or sequel or whatever, because the original film is kind of just like a straight up American comedy film, you know? This film wasn't that funny. And it felt more like kind of like a fantasy getting, you know, like it didn't feel like a comedy film. I don't even know if I would qualify Ghostbusters Afterlife as a comedy. So in tone, it just felt like a totally different film.
It felt like a family adventure.
But I think more heavy with the mysterious supernatural.
Yeah. I don't know.
I would categorize this more supernatural film than comedy family.
Yeah, no, I would too. And yeah, it wasn't like, it was cool, it was great, but it wasn't like a lighthearted thing, which I feel like the original Ghostbusters, even though it got kind of dark or whatever, was able to maintain. And it, like I said, you know, there you could tell so much of that was improvised and so much of it relied on, you know, Bill Murray, what Bill Murray brought and Dan Aykroyd and all that stuff. And Rick Moranis, too bad he wasn't in this one. So it was just so interesting too, because I was like, this is in tone, I don't feel it at all. Like some of these other films, right? Like Mary Poppins Returns, which is a remix of Mary Poppins. In tone, it was very similar to Mary Poppins, and it was pretty much the same exact film. So you like, there's no doubt what you're watching was that. It's not like I doubted that this was a Ghostbusters one, and yet it just didn't feel like it. You know, it didn't make me feel the way that the original Ghostbusters did. So like I said, the 2016 one in tone is definitely what I would expect more from a Ghostbusters film. You know, just like pure comedy and just kind of like absurdity.
I think for me...
I mean, a large Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is just pure absurdity.
Yeah, no. Absurdity, you know? I agree with you. Maybe that's what this movie lacked, right? A little bit of that absurdity.
Yeah.
In terms of...
It was too nostalgic, almost.
Yeah, but, I mean, we just complained about how they use
no,
that.
No, but, like, that's the thing, yeah. Like, but that's why in tone it was...
I think...
Not that.
I don't know. I mean, part of the reason that I also like the Ghostbusters, is the original one, is outside of the sexist jokes.
Seriously.
The real... You know, I think part of the fun of it is kind of, like, this idea of exploring what is ghosts, ectoplasm, and, like, kind of all these... You know, how, what do you do with like this phantasmal force and like the electricity they generate and all? There's like a science element in it in the background. That's a kind of, I don't know. I think for me, the original, there's a lot of wonderment that comes when watching the Ghostbusters because, granted, the science is like, it makes no fucking sense. It's still, I think like they, I don't know.
This new film's so sentimental. And there's just like no sentimentality in the first one, obviously, because it was just making a movie. You know, It didn't know it was going to be this like American classic or whatever.
Maybe the problem is that I don't mind the sentimentality just because the movie doesn't have to be the same genre as the original, I guess, maybe. Like maybe that's why I wasn't bothered by it.
Yeah,
that idea.
But I didn't say genre. I said tone. Genre and tone are very different.
But like, well, then what genre would you classify this as a genre then? If it's not a comedy.
Because I said it wasn't as lighthearted.
Yeah,
and
I know,
like, so like, it was darker. It was more sentimental. It took itself more seriously.
But then you guys both just said that you guys wouldn't classify it as like a comedy though.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, well, if I were to say it as a genre, I wouldn't. But in tone, you know, it took itself more seriously. It was more lighthearted and it was kind of dark.
I don't know. I kind of felt, I'm trying to think if I felt that this movie wasn't, like it wasn't as like haha funny as like the original Ghostbusters, right? But I laughed a lot during this movie.
They did have like these moments, but especially we're getting it with the kids,
yeah,
too.
Oh, I mean podcast, like, know, he was just totally stealing the show,
and just even like even,
and Paul Rudd,
even Phoebe trying to be funny, like the moments where she's like, I want to, you know, insert a social moment here and say a little joke, and you know, and podcast being the only one that could really appreciate it.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know. Yeah, and maybe it's just a changing way of like how we define like how we do comedies nowadays, because I think 2016's Ghostbusters might be the epitome of like kind of taking that the Hangover kind of comedy to the limit and seeing how it just cannot work sometimes.
Maybe.
And like, well, maybe now the way our comedies are going, like they're not like, maybe, I don't know, maybe our new comedies are a little more subdued.
American comedies, American Hollywood comedies, I should say, you know, have just always been like people, you know, looking at one, shots of people looking at one another, like one-offing and improvising and just, you know, a lot of actual verbal humor.
What's the last comedy that you saw in theaters?
Oh, man.
You know, not coming this for is you. I'm just asking you, just like in honesty, like what's the last comedy that you saw in theaters?
I can't remember because it's been so long since I've been in the theater.
was the last comedy that you, contemporary comedy that you've seen, like maybe as a film or something? Not a TV show.
I have to think about this because I don't watch a lot of contemporary films.
Eddie, can you think of one? No, I'm trying to think of like myself also. I mean, I think the most useful one for me was Lady Bird. That was a comedy.
We watched Tom and Jerry. That was a
comedy. Oh, there you go. But there you go. We see where trying to be funny has its drawbacks. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's what these the writers here figured out. It's just like, yeah, maybe we can't just be like funny. And also, it's a hard act to follow. Like, you just can't.
Oh, try Home Sweet Home Alone.
Oh, duh. I should have added, you know, a good comedy that you saw. but maybe that's the thing. Like, maybe the writers here also felt just like, we can't compete with the same kind of comedy that the original have. We had to focus on our strengths here. And the strengths here of just like, if we're focusing on a story that is about Egon dying, Egon's mm-hmm. death, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to have to shift the tone a little. And I thought it worked out.
Yeah, it worked. And I'm not saying it didn't work. It was just, it wasn't what I expected from a Ghostbusters, like, next installment. You know, I would consider, one of the things I like about the original is that tone that it sets.
I mean, maybe they learned the lessons from the second one, where it was
Ghostbusters
too fucking happy. Yeah, like, literally the end is because Kumbaya, you know?
Maybe. So I don't know. It just, for me, I guess it was one of the things where the whole movie I was watching and I was like, this doesn't even feel to me like I'm watching a Ghostbusters movie. You know, it felt like very much its own property. And that could be a positive. So yeah. I guess that was one of the only things that I thought about that I wanted to bring up.
Interesting. No, yeah. Point taken.
So overall, did you feel like this was needed?
Shockingly, yes. I think we needed, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's important for people our age who seem to be stuck in this like infantileness to see like some of these movies that we put on pedestals and see these actors for what they are, which are old men, and kind of realize that like time waits for no one, and like we are all headed towards the great beyond sooner or later, and like we need to all kind of grow some up. I'm being like very cynical here. No, I think
I totally disagree with everything you just said. I just have to know.
I thought it was needed only because we get to get a good solid closure for a lot of these characters, like at least the main character. Let's be real, Ghostbusters main character, wasn't just Peter Venkman, it was also Egon.
Yeah.
And we know that he passed away and he couldn't give us like closure for the movie. So this was a very nice way to give us closure to this character. And it opens the door to future installments without having to worry about that legacy anymore. They kind of close the book.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What do you think?
For me personally, it wasn't needed, obviously, because, you know, all of this is about your personal relationship with these media properties. And I'm not like in love with Ghostbusters, so I never really needed this movie, but they've been talking about it for years and fans have wanted it. And in some ways, it's like, do you really want a Ghostbusters 3 after this long, like after at least 10 years and now it's 32 years later? Do you really want to see these guys as old men? You know, it won't be the same thing, which is why they made the film practically the same. So at least fans wouldn't be disappointed. So in that way, I think people got a little bit of what they wanted. And I think that for them to, like you said, I do agree, the closure for the character and then the tribute that they did for Harold Ramis was just so, in my opinion, effectively done. That alone was just like a really nice, okay, great. Now Ghostbusters 3, we could say, has been made. Let's leave that alone. And if they do more Ghostbusters, it will be a brand new thing and they'll just continue on. Like Eddie said, they're just pass the torch to the next generation. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, kind of like finally closing off and leaving these characters alone was why it was needed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. In terms of box office right now, it opened up number one this weekend.
Woo! So
no word yet if this is going to get a sequel, right? We don't know where the franchise is going from here, right? It may not be a sequel. Maybe they'll get us... This is a Sony property. I don't know if Sony has like any streaming services, but it could easily... You could easily see the next installment being a canon series, you know?
Yeah. This was also one of the only properties that we've covered that didn't have a streaming option. Most of us, we've had the option of either going to the theater or seeing it on streaming. So I feel like we're finally, you know, going to now be back to going into the movie theaters.
Are you looking forward to it?
I am very much. I got a tub of popcorn. A guy like two seats down from me was snoring. You know, it was good to be back and hear reactions other than mine. He was snoring. I was like, oh, it's good to be back.
No, yeah, it is nice. I'm trying to go again this weekend. Eddie keeps saying that we don't have time, but I'm going to make time to see Lady Gaga. House of Gucci.
I kind of want to see it. However she says it, yeah.
Come on. She has somebody already, just the trailer alone gave us so many iconic lines for Lady Gaga impersonators.
Yeah.
In the name of Father, Son, House of Gucci. And I think my favorite one is like, our name, sweetie.
Yes, yes. But
I can't wait.
Back to Ghostbusters Afterlife. Have you seen it? Were you happy with what we got? Did you think that the 2016 episode, you know, 2016 movie was more than what you wanted? And did you think our earlier episode was enough for us to talk about Ghostbusters? Tell us what you think. Please reach out to us. We love hearing from you. You can email us, remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. We're active on social media. At Remakes Reboots Revivals on Instagram, Twitter at Remakes Podcast, Facebook.com/Remakes Reboots Revivals. Are we on anything else? YouTube, you could just search for us, Remakes Reboots Revivals. We actually get a lot of listens on YouTube, so we should plug that a little bit more and maybe even make some videos. One of our favorite features on this is that we have a hotline and where you could call in and you could share any thoughts with us and we might just play it on the air. So we have a number. You could call in at
862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326. Give us a call.
Who are you going to call?
Hey,
Remakes Reboots and Revivals.
We totally missed that. Nice, Eddie.
I know. How did we... thank you, Eddie.
My gift.
Well, it is Thanksgiving. And
I know.
You know, and I'm thankful that we've been able to do this for 3 years together. This is pretty great, you know? So, yeah. Thanks, guys. Thank you, listeners.
Was that a setup?
Yeah.
Was that a setup for me to answer? It's just like, I am thankful for that as well. Yeah, no, of course I am. I am so thankful that I have a place to express all my opinions. And I'm so grateful that we have listeners who
enjoy
listening to our opinions. And yes. You know what? I haven't said it in a while, but thank you to that one person who called me out on the Apple Podcast reviews and said that they are on my team all the way. I'm just like, I feel heard. I feel listened.
Yeah, thanks a lot, person. I paid $20 to say that. So
yeah. Rolando's mom.
But yeah. All right. Well, enjoy your holidays. And until
you too.
Happy wait, were you telling us or the listeners?
Oh yeah.
To the listeners, but to you guys too. Yeah, yeah, everybody, enjoy your holidays. And until next time, stay an original.